welcome to Tabletop Tommies. I'm Johnny.
And I'm Phil.
And in today's episode, we're talking about the armies of the partisans. That's not right.
We're talking about the partisans in Bolt Action.
How to model them, how to build them, how to paint them, and how to field them within the rules. The rules for the partisans are found in the Armies of France and Allies on page around 63, I'm going to guess.
It's 90-something.
90-something, there we go.
96.
So I wasn't far out.
30-odd, yeah.
So before we talk about the actual rules, the reason that it is an interesting army is because you've got so many modelling choices. So that's a bit of a change from our regular schedule, and I thought it would be nice to talk about the models you might use for this. I know you've got some partisans, Phil, so what did you use when you came to model them?
Yeah, so I haven't got a full partisan army. I have a number of French partisans that I use with the British Normandy selector, because you can stick in a couple of FFI squads in that selector. So I've used the Wargames Atlantic plastic partisan models.
Nice.
Which are great, you know, multi-pose models and so on. You get a lot of pistols and SMGs with that particular box set. You don't get a huge amount of rifles, and depending on how you choose to build your particular units later, for some people that's absolutely fine. They don't want rifles in their partisans. For others, you might need to have a think about where you're going to get rifles from. If you've got the Wargames Atlantic French box set, the arms are absolutely, you know, interchangeable. I ended up using the old British Commando sprues, so before they were modelled with the weapons, because they're similar size to the Wargames Atlantic, are not as chunky as you know, more modern. Yeah.
I was going to ask that. Do the Wargames Atlantic come with the weapons model to the arms?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, so you do have to, if you don't want to just use, you know, I think there's four rifles per sprue, for example. So if you want more than four guys per sprue with rifles, you need to do a bit of digging around. But they're great. There's some really nice models. There's a particular pose, which if you choose the right hat, looks like Indiana Jones. And you often see people on Facebook popping up with a partisan that looks like Indiana Jones, which is pretty cool. Other ones I've got are Warlord Games' French metals. So the mortar, the light howitzer, HQ team and that sort of thing. Warlord also do some Soviet partisans and some sort of generic Eastern European kind of Balkans type partisans as well.
Yep.
But there's lots and lots of other manufacturers. If you have a look at people like Crusader, Artisan Designs and Wargames Foundry, you can pick up some really interesting alternative sculpts, and they all roughly mix pretty well together. So the metal Warlord Games partisan models are not that too far out of the Wargames Atlantic plastic ones.
Yeah.
So yeah, so there's loads of options there. Other things worth talking about is the tournament figure for 2024 is Lieutenant Aldo Raine from Inglourious Basterds. So if you are going to an event this year and you're picking up one of those tournament figures, that's a great, you know, possibly great reason to start making up a partisan army.
Yeah, very nice. I've used some of the Crooked Dice ones as well before for civilians. When I was doing the Brandenburgers, that was supposed to be a jumping off point for a partisan force that never got built. And so I bought quite a lot of civilians to use as Brandenburgers in disguise that I was planning to use as the starting point for my partisans. And yeah, Crooked Dice I used a lot for them, but the metals are a little bit more difficult if they haven't got the exact weapons you want.
Yeah, sure.
To swap over. But there's still, it's, I think the joy of the partisan force is you can have a huge variety of different models, can't you?
I think because of the nature of the list, there's so much kit bashing potential. You know, you get the bombs as part of the national special rule. So, you know, you can make up little bomb markers. They're using captured weapons, you know, so be that in terms of French with, you know, captured German weapons, or be that in terms of Eastern Front, you know, Balkan State partisans, mixture of captured, you know, German weapons or Soviet weapons, etc. Supply dropped, you know, caches, captured vehicles, civilian vehicles, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, when you see partisan armies at events, and you don't see them that often, but you know, you see them, you know, fairly regularly, but not like all the time.
Yeah, I've played them a couple of times.
They do look good, you know. And I, as I said, I don't have a full army. I've thought about it, and it's one of those things where, you know, infinite time and resource, then I might get round to doing it, because it is so, they do look so different. And obviously they're not uniform in the way that, you know, your other Bolt Action lists are. So.
Yeah, they're literally not in uniform.
They're literally, well, yeah. Or they are a little bit. Some are, yeah. And that's the thing. You can mix and match, so.
Nice. Yeah. Should we move into the rules then?
Yep. So in terms of the army special rules, as with most, you've got three. So the first one is Fieldcraft, which we see in quite a few other nations. What this allows you is during setup, any partisan unit which starts the game hidden may also start in ambush. And as normal, you take the dice out, if that's the case, the order dice for the first turn. What you can also do with Fieldcraft is in the first turn of the game, all infantry units treat all rough ground and obstacles as open ground for the purposes of movement. So if you've got forward deploying units, particularly chunky forward deploying units, with the ability to run through rough ground or obstacles as though it's open ground in the first turn, there's a bit of a, you know, an interesting rules interaction there.
Yeah, I do think this one comes up a lot, and I do think it's one of those nice national characteristics where it's a nice little perk without being overpowered.
Mm. Infiltration is very simple. When outflanking, you ignore the minus one. The partisans, you know, knew the area they were in, so they knew how to outflank quickly and not get lost and delayed.
Same again, isn't it? It's a nice little perk to have without sort of ruining someone's day too much.
And then the final one is the hidden bomb, which is obviously entirely unique to the partisans. What this allows you to do then is at the start of the game, the partisan player takes three 20mm markers, diameter markers. You can place them anywhere on the table outside of the other player's deployment zone. And these represent bombs, booby traps, or mines that the partisans, their sympathizers, or agents may have planted before the game. The actual explosive device, if it's even there, is not necessarily exactly where the marker is placed. It's somewhere nearby. So in terms of the game itself, what this means then is that the first enemy unit that moves to within 6 inches of one of these counters must immediately roll a die. On a 1, 2, or 3, the counter's phony and you remove it, nothing happens. On a 4 or 5, nothing happens to that particular marker at that point. However, the next enemy unit that moves within 6 inches must test again.
Mm-hmm.
And then on a 6, it is actually a bomb and the bomb explodes. And the unit then takes a 4-inch plus 4 penetration hit as though it's hit by a heavy howitzer. Once it's gone, the bomb marker is removed. So the bombs, interestingly, they only affect the unit that triggers them and not other units nearby. And they don't affect partisan units no matter how close.
Nice. It's a very interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, if you're playing something like Key Positions, there's a classic one there where you just start putting your markers down around the objective markers and let the opponent get onto it first.
Yeah, make sure you don't put your objectives within your deployment zones.
Yes, so that you can't deploy onto their objective, yeah.
Yeah, that was going to be my question actually about the strategy of it, because the one that I've seen people do generally is you put it sort of on the edge of the deployment zone,
mm-hmm.
so that the person has to walk past it effectively. Yeah. Anytime there's bridges as well is great for this.
I was going to say roads and bridges, or if you've got, you know, two pieces of dense terrain with a bit of open ground in the middle, you stick it in the middle of that open ground and you're going to slow your opponent down because they're going to have to go through that dense terrain or round it or take the risk of that being the bomb. So
yeah, I'm not sure because I don't play partisans. I don't know what the best strategy offensively for this is, but mm-hmm. when I've played against it, I think what I've always done is just try to ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way, when someone uses their Brit Observer, the plunket down, if you spend the whole game trying to avoid that marker, you're not fighting the battle. And I think what I've done is either just put a sacrificial squad forward first,
yeah,
to try and get rid of it, like the chaplain or something petty. Or I think I've just went, you know what, if it happens, it happens.
Yeah.
Similar for yourself or?
Yeah, similar. I probably have maybe given them more, you know, credence than they're worth and maybe been a little bit more cautious. If you're playing a kill point mission, you do need to think about it. You're not going to run up your solo unit, you know, your solo vehicle or your solo man to set it off, because if you lose a dice, that's just poor planning, isn't it? So
yeah, I think you've hit a good point there, actually, that the strength of the bombs is people giving them too much thought, effectively. Mm-hmm. If people do really think about them, they're not thinking about other things, but also you've managed to affect their entire battle strategy. And so yeah, they're probably most powerful as a sort of a psychological weapon more than anything.
Yeah, I think that they're a bit like the Japanese, you know, suicide anti-tank guys.
Yeah.
If you ever lose a unit to a Japanese suicide anti-tank guy, something's gone wrong. But more often than not, you use them to funnel and filter your opponent into certain areas of the board, either to negate, you know, the effects of them or to bring them into an area where you've got a concentration of firepower. And you can use the bombs in the same way with partisans.
Yeah. I like those units that sort of change the way you play the game a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Should we look at some units then?
Yeah. So speaking of units, Johnny, what have we got in the HQ section?
So it's very similar to just all the other armies, isn't it? You've got your standard lieutenant, first and second, can't have veteran, which kind of makes sense if he's a partisan. You do get a liaison officer, but he is effectively just a forward air observer. That one can be veteran. That's sort of showing, because he's been dropped in effectively, hasn't he, to fall, to spot for the Air Force that are backing the partisans up. And that's all you get in the Armies of France book, but I believe there's more in one of the D-Day books. Is that right?
Yeah, so in the US D-Day sectors book, you do get some more partisan units and a couple of theatre selectors as well. This, for the HQ, this adds to the JEDBA team. And these are members then of the Special Operations Executive or the US Office of Strategic Services, so the SOE or OSS. And in terms of game terms, it's an additional officer. So it's not instead of, it's an additional officer.
That's a real shame, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And it is expensive because they're veteran as well. But you're getting a three-person team, one officer and two other men or women.
Nice.
They're armed as modeled, so SMG, pistol or rifle. You can add demo charges if you want. What they do is supply coordination. And what this allows you to do then is, before the game begins, you roll a die. And there's a possibility that you may get extra equipment for a unit in your platoon or all units in a single platoon. So, for example, you might end up getting some SMGs, or you might get some SMGs and an LMG as well.
Interesting. So, for example, if you roll, I assume sixes are good. So, if I roll a six, what happens?
That's your full drop. Yeah. So, if you roll a six, you get each infantry squad in a single platoon may exchange a single weapon for an SMG for free.
Nice.
And you get an LMG.
For every squad?
So that is for each infantry squad in a single platoon. So you can't do it. If you've got dual platoon, you can't do it in a dual platoon.
Yeah.
So that's a six. The five, the three to five is SMGs, no LMG. Mm-hmm. And then one or two is nothing.
That's pretty cool, to be fair, because that was 23 points per squad. Pretty tasty. I mean, you're paying quite a lot for that perk, but it's nice that he's got something that isn't just, I'm another officer.
Yes. Yeah. And I guess if you have a think about how many squads you're taking and what size of them as well, you may end up, you know, if you're rolling a three up, you're going to get all the SMGs, get a six, you get a bonus LMG that nobody really wanted, but it's bonus free one, so take it anyway.
I mean, I'd always take one for free every time. Is that all the HQs then, or were there some
No, that is it. And then obviously your medic and your chaplain, as per the updates in other campaign books.
Oh, yeah, of course, because they've been made generic by the for all nations, haven't they, by the latest campaign books?
Yeah.
Brilliant. So I guess into the infantry then, what have we got in there, Phil?
So as you would expect, not a huge amount of choice. not going to run through each unit in turn, but in terms of your basic partisan squads, you've got inexperienced guys, you've got early war regulars, and you've got late war regulars. And depending on which one of those three are, you can kind of mix and match. You can take them up to 20 men, which is huge, obviously.
Nice.
You can downgrade them to just have pistols rather than rifles. You can swap rifles out for shotguns. You can add SMGs. You can put AT grenades with them. Late war partisan squads, you can take a single Panzerfaust. So you can do quite a lot with them. It just depends on if you want to lean into that inexperienced or regular, and then what sort of size. They start with the 5-man, and then you can add up to 15 men each time.
Yeah, very nice. And the only note on them from the FAQ is that they can't be shirkers anymore, basically. So if anyone hasn't looked at partisans before, is now going out buying Armies of France. It does say the inexperienced squad can be made shirkers, but the FAQ removed that because it doesn't really make sense for the brave
men of the resistance. Yeah.
to be suddenly shirkers. Deciding that actually I've changed my mind. I don't want to be here anymore. So that's a sort of our standard three squads.
Yeah.
But they've got a couple other options, haven't they?
Yeah, so if you do want to look at some a little bit more kind of tasty squads, you've got guerrilla fighters, which are veterans. The main thing to note here is that if you really want to, you can give them all SMGs.
And that's a 20-man squad as well, isn't it? That's a lot of men with SMGs, isn't it?
You're right, Johnny. Yeah, that's a 20-man squad with SMGs. That is a lot.
But I mean, what's that sort of 260 plus 60?
320, so it's 16 points a man, 13 for vets, 3 for SMGs, times 20. Yeah,
that's not cheap, is it?
No, bringing a Death Star into that unit, into that build.
It's still less than a Tiger, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Most things are, to be fair.
So
yeah.
I think between the two, I'd rather have the 20 men with SMGs, but to each their own.
And you can give them AT grenades like the other partisan squads as well. Mm-hmm. The other thing you can do is cavalry squads. And so these are regular five-man men on horses, normal standard points cost, so 12 points for a regular on horses. You can take up to 10 in that squad. You can, you know, give them SMGs if you want, give them an MG and so on, and they count as cavalry carbines from horseback. But it's a nice little thing there if you want to model, you know, your Eastern Front partisans,
nice,
on your horses, or, you know, later on in the war, your French resistance, you know, out there in the countryside grabbing the horses. Off we go. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I think that's sort of a key build because they'd benefit from fieldcraft as well, wouldn't they? So you could run through cover turn one, get right in their face. And so I think that would be a pretty decent build, to be fair.
And this is what I was saying at the start, where if you start looking at how the national rules interact with some of the units, you can do some interesting things with them rather than just going, here's my regulars or here's my own experience blob and that sort of thing.
That's what you see quite a lot, isn't it? Sort of the big 20-man blobs with pistols because... Yeah. They're not very expensive and they're very hard to shift 20 men in bolt
action. Absolutely,
yeah.
Yeah, they're going to hit like anything when they get into contact.
Brilliant.
And the one other to note is from the D-Day US book, which is the Mackie squad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this one's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, this one is good. Yeah. So it's inexperienced, five man with rifles, 35 points, bog standard there. You can add up to 15. So again, you can make up to 20 men. Up to three can have SMGs. Any of them can replace their rifles for pistols. So it's what you often see. You can add an LMG if you want. You can give them AT grenades if you want. What you can also do, and this is what you do see, is that one rifle-armed Mackie may be a marksman for plus 20 points, and another Mackie then becomes an assistant. So what this allows you to do is to basically put a sniper into a squad.
Yeah. And there was, I can't remember the exact ruling on this, but the question... So I'll say what I think the ruling was, and then you can correct me. The question was, does the inexperienced sniper have minus one to hit for being inexperienced? And I believe the answer was no. He's still hitting on a three up.
Did that ever properly get answered? There was a big thing, wasn't there, on Facebook 18 months ago about this?
Yeah, and I thought it had hit an FAQ.
Okay.
I don't recall, because I think the argument was that the sniper special rule says the only modifier is for pins and the assistant. But I don't often play snipers, if I'm completely honest, and especially not partisan snipers within squads. And so I actually don't know if it ever hit the official channels now you mention it.
So it says in the rulebook, the shot ignores negative to hit modifiers except for pinning markers and for the missing assistant if the sniper is the last man standing. So rules as written, it ignores the inexperience because that's a negative to hit modifier, which it ignores. The only things it doesn't ignore is the missing assistant and pin markers. So, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
So, overall, you haven't got a huge amount of choice. You've got your inexperienced, your regulars, your veterans, you've got some cavalry, and then you've got your Mackie squad. What more do you need?
Yeah. And actually, like, there's not a lot of different unit descriptions, but because you can range the size of the squad so much, they're actually... There's probably a surprising amount of variety you can get within the one build just by like changing the numbers.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And the ability to, you know, you may not want to, but the ability to take a massive squad of veterans with SMGs, for example, you don't see that very often at all. You know, take your, I don't know, your Soviet SMG squads or British commandos. Yeah, you can stack them all out of SMGs, but you can't stack 20 men out with SMGs. No.
And this is the classic sort of four dice build you get where someone takes a veteran tiger or something ridiculous. Yeah. It would be really funny to do it with partisans with 640 points in two 20-man squads, a big officer team, and then you capture a tank or something just to waste the rest of the points.
Yeah. So infantry teams, Johnny, what have we got?
Infantry team-wise, not a huge amount sort of beyond what you'd expect. You're getting sort of the usual machine gun. You're getting a flamethrower team, which is nice. That does have a special rule where, because it's badly maintained, it's an additional minus one to hit.
Yeah.
But you save 5 points for it. It does make it a bit of a risky proposition when you've got that one in six chance of losing it. You get your two mortars teams, so light and medium, in the usual way. None of these can be veteran. They can all be inexperienced or regular.
Yeah.
You also have... I thought you had a sniper team, but I can't see it.
Yeah, do you do. It got added. It missed off the book, but it is in there.
Ah. Brilliant. So I'll just say that as though I knew that. You also get the sniper team, but it's not found in the book. It's added in the FAQ. And then the ones that are interesting to me are the anti-tank options because because they're partisans and they're either capturing weapons or supplied by different nations, mm-hmm. you've got three different varieties. You've got your anti-tank rifle, mm-hmm. your Piat, and your bazooka, all at the usual points cost you'd expect from, so 30, 40, and 60 points respectively for the regular version. Again, inexperienced or regular.
It's interesting that you don't get the Panzerschreck as a separate option.
That is really interesting, actually, that I wonder if, because obviously they were probably supplied with anti-tank rifles and Piats and bazookas from...
Yeah, they were supplied rather than stealing them. Yeah.
And so I wonder if that was the logic behind that. It would be really cool, though, to have the Shrek as an option, but mm-hmm. inexperienced only because it's captured.
Yeah, yeah.
or you have the sort of the low ammunition style rule where you do a the same way with a flamethrower. You take a test after every shot to see if they've run out of rockets.
Yeah.
But that's about it from the Armies of France book. Was there more added in D-Day?
Yeah, just the one, which is the Molotov anti-tank squad.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Which is, it starts off as two men, inexperienced, regular, or veteran, armed with rifles and AT grenades. You can add up to three, so you can take it up to a five-man squad. Mm-hmm. You can give them SMGs, you can give them pistols. What these allow you to do, though, is to set up as though they are observers or snipers. They may also start the game hidden, and because they're an anti-tank squad, they get the tank hunter rule as well. So they're like the Soviet forward deploying tank hunter squads.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
The Soviet one, though, gets the tough fighting tank rule, doesn't it? Which
they get.
These guys don't get that.
No, these are just tank hunters rather than tough tank hunters. Yeah.
I mean, it's still something to give like pause to snipers mm-hmm. and stuff in the middle of the table. These little forward deployers can often be a bit of a headache for people, can't they?
But if you think about how you can forward deploy and on turn one, you can run through rough ground.
Yes.
So if, strictly speaking, mm-hmm. if you're deployed on the 24-inch line and your opponent is deployed on their 12-inch line, you could technically, if you're directly in front of them and with line of sight, you could assault on turn one, should you so want to. Equally, though, if you're deployed, in and around the 24 inches and they move their vehicles up, because you've got that ability to run through, you could pull off an assault, on turn one onto their vehicles if you chose to.
Oh, absolutely. It's a good way to keep them back. I mean, the anti-tank grenades aren't that scary, but
no.
If you're like an armor 8 tank and there's five dudes, they're scary enough that I probably would stay mm-hmm. a little bit further back. It's interesting, actually, with you saying that charge, just going back to the cavalry, like that gives, if your opponent wants to stay out of charge range, they're not forward deploying.
They're not forward deploying.
It's a shame you can't get forward deploying cavalry because that would be amazing. So is that all the team weapons?
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
So I guess time to look at the artillery, the big guns.
Or not, the little guns.
It's anything you could hide in a barn or a garage, basically, isn't
it? Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, it's very straightforward. Light artillery, light AT gun, light autocannon. That's it. Yeah.
That's simple. So you basically got one of each.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And nothing added in the campaign books.
No, nothing at all. No.
A bit of a shame, that. Mm-hmm. I think I'd probably go light howitzer just for, because it's nice and universal.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Well, not a lot of artillery, but what have we got in the tank section, Phil? I assume loads of choice.
Loads of choice. Well, so you can take anything from the German or Italian list. If I read the wording from the actual Armies of France book where it appears. So, it would be impractical for us to give entries in this list for every German or Italian vehicle that could conceivably be used by the partisan forces described. If you wish to include vehicles other than the trucks and civilian cars that follow, you'll need to refer to the supplements covering the armies of Germany and the armies of Italy in the Axis. And the reason for reading that in a slightly laborious way is there is some debate about, is it any German vehicle or any Italian vehicle, or, as is what I just read, is it... I would interpret that to basically say, if it appears in the armies of Germany or if it appears in the armies of Italy, you can take it as a captured vehicle. And I guess it's similar to the conversations you often see about Axis support vehicles and Axis support units and what can be taken as Axis support for the mining nations.
Yeah, the Axis support one, I think, is more specific. So my reading of that one is I'd lean towards what you're saying there, like ideally armies of Germany or Italy.
Yeah.
But I actually think it's not as specific, because it's like it says to refer to rather than can choose vehicles from, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, but it's armies capital A, armies of Germany, armies of Italy in the Axis. They're referring to a thing, which is the book, The Armies of Germany and the Armies of Axis, as opposed to lowercase a, which would be, have a look at the supplements to cover the armies of Germany.
Yeah, but again, I'm thinking just because that refer rather than, like, the it's got the, it'd be impractical for us to give everything. Like, refer to these as though, like, here's a good place to get some ideas. Mm. And so actually, I wouldn't be too offended with someone bringing all sorts of German or Italian vehicles. To be honest, actually, if it fitted the theme of the force, I don't know, say it was partisans where the Japanese had captured the land, I could see that as well. And I actually think as long as down the club, obviously, if you're in agreement, it's not a problem. If it's a tournament, I think as long as the TO's sort of quite clear with what's accepted and what's not.
There was something on Facebook recently where it got a bit out of hand and a bit silly, where it was basically you could take any vehicle in experience. I was thinking, fantastic. I could put my, whatever that Soviet boat is, I can have that sailing down the Irrawaddy in Burma with my Burmese partisan, anti-Japanese, Indian nationalist, blah, blah, blah army.
I mean, I'd allow it at events because I think it would just be fun. So if you look at the wording for the actual Axis support rule, what it says is, so this is the Bulgarian one, for example. A Bulgarian force may include one extra unit from either the German list in the Bolt Action Rulebook, all the Armies of Germany book, all the Italian Eastern Front Theatre Selector from this book, though no Italian Army special rules apply.
That's and so really
because
specific.
It's very specific, that's what makes me think that the partisan rule was written with the intention of being sort of any German or Italian
that fits
vehicle.
The theme you're trying to produce.
And if you need help working out which ones, refer to these two supplements. That's what made me think that maybe there's a little bit more grey in this one.
I mean, either way, whatever you do end up taking, you can only take up to and including armor damage value 9. They have to be inexperienced, and they also get the unreliable rule, which means that when they suffer one or more pin as a result of an enemy attack, it automatically suffers an additional pin for that attack.
Yeah, so that is a bit of a kicker, isn't it? When I run it with my Finns and they've got unreliable captured vehicles, they get a point reduction.
Yes.
And so it's actually, I never mind that rule in that context. When you're paying full price and you've got that negative modifier, especially because you're already inexperienced, and so you're already at -1 to hit, and you've got that extra pin, so you're definitely hitting at -1 again when you pass your order test. That's pretty brutal, isn't it?
Yeah. So you've got, you know, a huge selection in terms of what vehicles you can take, but you probably want to limit it to certain things because of the impact of the unreliable rule and stacking that pin on what is already an inexperienced vehicle.
Yeah. The question I have with the captured vehicles is, because this hasn't been split into armored cars and tanks.
No.
And so is this captured vehicle living in the slot it occupied in the original list, or is it living in a brand new slot that exists called captured vehicles, but that's not on the generic platoon, so...
No, so it...
What I'm asking basically is, can I take an armored car and a captured tank?
So, interestingly, when you look at in the partisan list in the Armies of France, options for the partisans on page 97 of Armies of France, it's 0-1 armored car, 0-1 tank. So, you're still within that restriction of 0-1 armored car, 0-1 tank. However, they've just grouped it all together under the heading of captured vehicles.
So I could take a captured Puma and a captured Tiger. Yeah. No, captured Panther, because I can't have the Tiger. He's got too much armor.
Yes. So as long as it's 9+ or below.
Nice.
Was the Panther 10?
The Panther is an armor 9, but he has, I can't remember, it's like extra armor on the front. I can't remember what the name of the rule is, but it counts as 10 for frontal penetration.
Fair enough. Okay.
I mean, that's interesting, because I think I've always, when I've been sort of wishlisting a partisan force, I've always only included one captured vehicle.
Yeah, it follows the standard, you know, generic platoon structure of 0-1 armored car, 0-1 tank.
And can you also take captured transports then? Because they are vehicles.
So it doesn't say you can take captured transport. It says that you can take your generic transport, in inverted commas. So that's your general purpose truck, which is up to 12 men. Inexperienced or regular with an MMG.
What?
I know. I thought that would
count me in.
I thought that would get you excited. or a civilian car, which is up to four men, which is also interesting. It's like the Japanese Kurigani.
I've got a little Citroen for my officer. And then you can have his two buddies and an intelligence officer, and everyone gets a seat.
Although, going back to the question, can you take captured transport? So again, in the book, page 105, if you wish to include vehicles other than the trucks and civilian cars below, you'd need to refer to the supplements covering the army soft. So I think you probably could take captured transport from Italy or Germany.
I tell you what would be really cool then, to do the half-track force. You know the half-track German force that everyone's always wanted to build, but it's always a bit rubbish because it's just so expensive. Mm-hmm. If you're forced to take them inexperienced anyway, it would be really cool to have the partisans with you know, the FFI logo. Whitewashed all the swastikas, and you put the FFI logo over the top. That would be a really cool force for, like, the Welsh Open or something.
Until you get your first pin on your open-topped half-track, which is then supplemented with the second pin for the unreliable rule. And then another unit shoots you, so you get another two pins in the same turn. So you're four pins already, thinking this is a really bad idea. Thanks, Johnny, for recommending it.
I mean, yes, but it was never a competitive force to begin with. So you're just changing how badly I'm losing, basically.
Fair enough.
And actually, I think you could probably sneak up little 250s rather than doing the 251s.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That would be cool.
Yeah, the 250s would be cool. Until someone starts shooting at you, but yeah.
But again, you pop the gorillas in. Little five-man gorillas with five SMGs. That'd be really cool.
With pins coming out of their ears, yeah.
Yeah, but they're veteran. They'll be all right.
They'll shrug it off.
Yeah, they'll be absolutely fine. Is that all the units, or have we
that is it. That is it.
It's really interesting. I honestly had never thought about taking captured transport, but now...
No.
I could probably take a flob sack, couldn't I?
A what?
They're actually called floss sacks. It's the what's it called? The double S. Well, that looks like a B.
Okay, yeah.
So it's floss and then sack. It's those little dinghies. So it's in one of the, I think it might be in Sea Lion.
Oh, what, did they use the inflatable dinghies with wheels, with engines?
They've got engines, to be honest. I think they might just be paddled.
Okay.
They're in one of the campaign books, and it's 10 points, and it only can go on water. And the thing that really annoys me about it is you can't carry it. I wish you could. I wish there was a rule a bit like the token in Top Secret, where when the men aren't in the water, they're carrying their flob sack.
It's a bit like the Welbeck bikes on the British Airborne. They're great until you get off them, and then that's it. Yeah. They're done. Yeah.
And then they become terrain, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, theatre selectors, I guess, would be the thing to look at. Are there a lot? I think there's only a couple in the Armies of France book, but I imagine D-Day adds loads as well, does it?
Yeah, there's a couple in the Armies of France which are not massively worth shouting about. I mean, the first one, 1939-41, doesn't allow you to take any captured vehicles. You can take the transport.
That's a shame.
42-45 does allow you to take captured vehicles. They limit the number of guerrilla squads to one. The ones that are interesting are the D-Day US sector theatre selectors.
Mm-hmm.
Dramatic pause as I find them.
Well, while you're finding it there, the thing that I think the reason I thought you could only have one captured vehicle is because Liberation 42-45 doesn't have a tank and armoured car. It just has a 0-1 captured vehicle. Yeah.
Okay.
And so I think that's where my misconceptions come from. And I imagine it's because I've always been planning to run it for these theatres-only tournaments.
Mm-hmm. So you get a couple in the US D-Day sectors book. Paris Uprising. It adds a theatre-specific unit, the Paris Police Prefecture Squad, which we didn't talk about because you can't take it in the generic platoon, but it's worth noting that. What is interesting, you can take 0-2 sniper teams. You can take 0-4 of your normal squads on top of your two infantry squads. You can't take Mackie squads, so you can't take your two snipers and then, you know, another
That's
six.
That's what I was waiting for.
Six snipers. Yeah. But what is interesting with the captured vehicles, actually, again, this is 0-1 captured vehicles rather than 0-1 armoured car, 0-1 tank. You can take a Hotchkiss H-39, the Renault R-35, the Renault R-40, the Sommier S-35, the Flampanzer B-2F, FT-17, or a Panther. If you take one of the French ones, you can take it at inexperienced, regular, or veteran.
Because
the idea being that at this point of the war, so it's late war, the resistance fighters would have included men who may well have been trained on how to use these vehicles prior to France being France falling. So you can take these at a higher veterancy and they don't get the unreliable rule.
That's really nice. I like that.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that's worth noting with them, you don't get the hidden bomb rule, but you do get to choose up to 100 points of barricades or barbed wire sections. And it's again to represent the fact that this was the Paris uprising, the resistance to the German occupation post D-Day.
From a games mechanics perspective, I much prefer the bombs.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're more fun and also much cleaner as well. Yeah.
So the one I really like in the US D-Day book is the Mackey reinforced platoon.
Now we're talking.
So you can take your two squads have to be Mackey squads, it's compulsory. You could take 0-1 village priest, which counts as a chaplain, which I think is amazing. You could take 0-4 infantry squads, which can include Mackie squads. So you can have 6 Mackie squads there with your 6 marksmen in. You could take 0-2 snipers. So that's 6. So that's 8 snipers in that particular
thing.
So this
is your 8 sniper list. Yeah. Nice.
The reason why I like it is you can also take a limited number of SAS units. So you can take a maximum of 1 out of those 4 choices, 1 SAS infantry section.
So this is like the reverse of your usual list with partisans, where normally you've got the commandos with the partisans,
a couple of
helping,
the partisan squads, yeah.
And this is the anti-you, where it's the partisans with a couple of commando squads helping out, basically.
Yeah. So you can take, an SAS infantry section. You can take the Jebba team as part of your HQ. You can take an SAS weapons team. And you can also take an SAS jeep, or an SAS armored car, or a capture Kuba wagon with a pintle mounted MMG.
Nice. That is pretty cool.
So yeah, you have to be, there's certain restrictions in terms of you can't take the Jeep without taking an SAS squad and that kind of thing. So you've got to have your SAS infantry section or weapons team in order to access the vehicles.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's like the Wofficer, isn't it? Where you've got to have the Waffen squad to get the Wofficer, etc. That makes sense. And I don't imagine the people who are running that theater selector, I don't imagine would mind too much because you're going to be leaning into theme, I think, most of the time.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I've definitely seen this before. I think seen it at the Welsh Open last year. The Mackies, big chunky Mackie squads, possibly with some SAS guys with them as well.
Yeah, I remember when this book first came out, I remember I can't remember who it is. So I'm really sorry to whoever it is because I think it's someone who's a regular at the tournaments. But I think they ran this quite early on after it came out. Mm-hmm. And it was a bit of a bogeyman when it first came out because it was like, wow, 8 snipers.
Interestingly, what you can do as well, we're sliding into different episode, but in the SAS Northwest selector, mm-hmm. which is in the same book, you could do what I've done before, which is predominantly taking your SAS, or in my case, it was commandos and paras, with 0-2 Mackie squads as well. So there's a bit of a mix and match smorgasbord going on across these different selectors.
That's really fun. I have enjoyed the D-Day books, to be honest. They've added a lot of little quirky things. I think, if anything, they've added like too much for me that I can't keep track of what's in there. But I think as sort of a campaign game or just sort of like a theatre selectors game, the D-Day books are brilliant for that. You can sort of just lean into whatever your favourite faction is. And really, like, even if you're on the other side of the wall, the Lions of Carentan selector is a brilliant one.
You've got the whole SS extra units and selectors in the US D-Day book as well. So yeah, they've fleshed out the Fallschirmjäger, fleshed out the SA, fleshed out the SS as well.
Yeah, it's a good collection of books that sort of set, and clearly sort of thought out together, that they thought, we'll do this whole chunk together.
Yeah.
Because it makes sense. So fair play, Warlord. Well done. Anything else to discuss on partisans?
Just overall, I really like them in the sense of they're unique. You're breaking up, your greys, your greens, your browns, your khakis, etc. You really can go to town with them in terms of how you model them. I've got a Renault AHN truck, which is one of the classic, 1940s French trucks, which I run as a 12-man, 3-ton truck for my Brits if I choose to. So, you know, you mentioned about the civilian car and the Citroen and that kind of thing. So there's some really good options there. I just have a bit of fun with them, but they also do play differently because you've got, you know, 0 to 20 men, which you can downgrade to inexperience, give them pistols, start throwing them forward. Yeah. Big chunky squads of AT grenades, all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah. It's, I do love how much variety this one army list includes.
Yeah.
Without it being sort of, I don't know, if you think of something like the Brits where you've got loads of different campaign books that cover them, and that's why they've got loads of different variety.
Yeah.
Within the space of this one book and sort of one supplement, you can build parts and forces from all these different places.
Yeah.
And I really like that. It's interesting as well, actually, from a games mechanics perspective or from a competitive perspective, you can be tough fighters for cheaper, because when you trade in for your pistols, you actually save 3 points a man.
Yeah.
And that's quite a unique feature. I think there's only one or two other places it crops up. And so that is a bit of an incentive. If you are a charging, sort of gung-ho kind of player, this is a good list for you, I'd say.
Yeah, and I think with the release of the Wargames Atlantic plastic miniatures, it's probably getting on what, over a year and a half ago now, isn't it? That's made it much, much easier to actually put a force together rather than relying on metals. As cool as the metals are, if it's an entirely metal force, it's going to get expensive. So with the plastics or 3D printing options as well, you can do it in an interesting way.
My only question with that is, are they in stock? Because we had, do you remember we had the drought of French where you just couldn't get them anywhere?
I think they are more in stock than the French infantry models were. They did go out of stock in the UK, and Wargames Atlantic do have, you know, some stock issues at times, but I think from memory, they were more in stock than the French ones were, which just weren't in stock at all, were they, for a long period of time?
Oh, no, not at all. Because I'm genuinely, I say this every episode.
You do say this every episode, yeah.
But actually, the thing that always puts me off, I said this when we did Greeks and Norwegians and all the rest of it, it's always because I can only get metal models.
Mm.
The fact that they're plastic is a huge selling point for me, because I've already got quite a selection of sort of metal civilians.
Yeah.
If I could just bolster my numbers with plastic models that are more generic, if you will, because they're not as unique sculpts, but they're just there to bulk the numbers, I'm actually pretty keen on that.
And if you start playing around with different arms and, you know, different attachments to the webbing and, you know, backpacks and that kind of thing, you can get them to look completely unique.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm genuinely thinking about it now, because there's been nothing that's made me want to build a painter model recently.
Mm-hmm.
And because I've just been going to loads of tournaments as well, I'm just like, I keep leaning into the Americans because I don't have
easier,
a lot of time to build.
Yeah.
I don't have anything that I'm passionate enough about to commit the time to building it. And equally, I just need a tournament army. So I keep leaning on like the armies I've got. Whereas now I'm actually thinking this could be a bit of a passion project for us.
And that was one of the reasons for choosing the French for the Warlord GT was, I've got to paint some camels, but that'll be pretty cool. But I can't be asked to paint a whole new army this year.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of the Marines or the Finns.
What if they're plastic, though?
Yeah.
Because also you could do, if they all have just like brown trousers or the same color trousers, you could just paint jackets different colors to give them the variety.
So the way I think I batch painted them in about 8 at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And I mixed, so some had one shade of a trouser and then the guy next to him had the same shade on the jacket.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the hat, the third person might have the hat in that shade. Yeah, and you do that down the line.
Yeah, and then all the same coloured berries, because some of them have berries on, don't they?
Yeah, so some had black, some had blue, some had like royal blue, some had black, some had navy, some have got Adrian helmets.
Mm.
You can paint the flag on the arm.
Yeah.
You can paint the tricolour as like a band on the arm, for example. So.
And did you on yours?
Yeah, I've got a couple of them that have got the French bannier. Thanks as ever for listening. Please do like, share and subscribe. Please also keep your comments going. We'd love to hear from those of you who do play partisan armies, and if you're thinking of playing a partisan army, we'd absolutely love to see one of these later on in the year in the UK.
Ta-ta for now.
Ta-ta for now.